Hello again and welcome to another episode of the Ominous Origins Podcast with me, Casey. Of course, this episode is still brought to you by the wonderful people over at MorbidlyBeautiful.com. Go to MorbidlyBeautiful right now for all your horror pop culture content needs. I know, two episodes in 1 month. What kind of witchcraft is this? Anyway, we're going to get back to talking about some true crime stuff and an unsolved mystery from 2010. And this one is going to take us all the way to the land kind of down under in New Zealand, the land of the Hobbits, Lord of the Rings, and Middle Earth. Although, there weren't guns in Middle Earth. Unlike in this case, where a guy called Scott Guy was unceremoniously shot. The crime has gone unsolved, and we'll get into the details of the shooting of Scott Guy right now.
Ominous. Ominous. It is an adjective.
Sounds like someone breathing.
Ominous.
So, just who was Scott Guy? Well, he was a farmer who grew up in Byerburn, and his family farm, which was near Fielding, Manawatui, Wananui, in New Zealand, was his family home. Now, there was a guy called Ewan McDonald who had worked at the farm since leaving school at 16. McDonald ran the dairy operation and was married to Guy's sister, Anna. And the couple had 4 children together, which is a lot of children, to be honest, but I digress. Guy was responsible for raising the calves and growing the crops for the cows. Guy and McDonald both earned around $100,000 a year working as farm managers for Guy's parents who owned the property. The court was told that, at a family meeting in 2008, Guy said he expected to inherit the family farm, and that did indeed lead to some tensions between him and his brother-in-law. In May of 2008, Scott Guy's parents, Brian and Joe, transferred 400 shares representing 20% of the business to Scott, McDonald, and each of their wives. Brian Guy testified at the trial that he explained to his son, Scott, that he was not going to inherit the farm, and that to own it, he would have to buy everyone else out, which only really seems fair. The tension appeared to have subsided, and Brian reported that in the previous 12 months, everyone seemed to be getting along really well. 2 weeks before Scott died, he and McDonald traveled to another part of New Zealand for a dairying conference. Nikki Guy, Scott's other sister, said that the pair had a fantastic time. One of Guy's former farm workers, Callum Bowe, told police that he and McDonald had gone on a nighttime trip that they called missions, in which they trespassed, poached deer, and took revenge on farmers who had caught them by secretly returning to destroy valuable livestock and property. He told police that in one of these quote-unquote missions in October of 2008, they torched an old home on Guy's section. In January of 2009, about 18 months before the shooting, they vandalized a home being built by Guy and his wife Kylie, causing about $14,000 worth of damage. At the time, no one but Beau and McDonald knew who was responsible. Now, all this lead-up builds to the fateful shooting. Scott Guy was shot dead at the end of his driveway after he stopped to open a farm gate somewhere between 4:43 a.m. and 5 a.m. on July 8, 2010. He died from shotgun wounds to his neck, face, and arms. His body was discovered by David Berry, a truck driver, at about 7 a.m., Barry called the police at 7:08 and then called his landlord, Bruce Johnston. When Johnston arrived, he took a quick look at the body and phoned McDonald at 7:16 a.m. 2 police cars soon arrived and McDonald arrived on his quad bike shortly after. McDonald immediately rang Guy's father at 7:21 a.m., sounding distressed and incoherent. Adding to the mystery, 3 chocolate-colored Labrador puppies also disappeared from the farm at the time of Guy's death. The police claim McDonald stole the puppies and made it look like a burglary gone wrong. Now, all this does eventually lead up to a trial. So at the trial, the Crown alleged Guy still wanted to take control of the farm and 2 years earlier had gone to a family meeting explaining that he expected to inherit the farm. There had been some tensions between Guy and McDonald, as we discussed, and the prosecutor claimed that, quote, this demand might as well have been his death warrant. Crown prosecutor Ben Vanderkolk alleged McDonald closed the farm gates, which forced Guy to stop and get out of his vehicle. Vanderkalk said when Guy got out, McDonald shot him in the throat and in the face. Police believe that the killing occurred about 4:43 a.m. Vanderkalk alleged McDonald used the farm shotgun and was wearing size 9 Proline dive boots while committing the crime. The boot prints found at the scene were the only forensic evidence police had potentially linking McDonald to the scene of the crime. But let's pause for a second. McDonald was at the scene of the crime. We know he did show up shortly after police were called, and he was one of the first to witness the body being, well, dead. So it makes sense that his boots would make an impression in the ground around the initial crime scene. It was then proposed that McDonald allegedly then rode his bike back to the farm, which was about 1.46 kilometers away, arriving just after 5 a.m. where he was milking the cows. Vanderkalk claimed that McDonald tried to make it look like a robbery by killing the Labrador puppies, which were missing. Police excavated some of the property where McDonald lived, looking for dive boots, dead puppies, and shotgun cartridges. But nothing was found. Let's skip over to the defense for a second, and when the defense lawyer Greg King said that there were four fatal flaws in the Crown's case. The prosecution claimed Guy was killed by two blasts from the farm shotgun, which occurred at 4:43 a.m. Four nearby residents testified that they heard three shots in quick succession around 5 a.m. King called witnesses who said that McDonald was seen on the farm at about 5 a.m., so he could not have been the killer. King also called an American shooting champion as an expert witness. The witness said that the farm shotgun had to be reloaded after two shots, so it was not possible for three shots to be fired that quickly. In his summing up of the end of the trial, King added that there were three shots. The murder weapon could not have been the farm's double-barreled shotgun. The expert witness suggested that it was an automatic or semi-automatic weapon that had been used. King also challenged the forensic expert David Neal about the size of the footprints found at the scene. Neal told the court that there were more than 50 footprints next to Guy's body and that they were all made by size 9 Proline boots. King said that the 33 wavy rows of the plaster impressions on the boots presented by the police were not comparable to the size 9. He said that the prints came from a size 11 or 12 boot. McDonald's wife, Anna, confirmed that McDonald's shoe size was indeed 9 and they had been thrown out 2 years earlier. King had also said that the police ignored other possible suspects and failed to investigate car tire marks at the scene of the crime and the sighting of a mystery sedan on Arangi Road. He said police also failed to investigate an offender who had a history of shotgun crimes and had committed a string of local burglaries. A cigarette packet was indeed found outside the house that matched one stolen by the burglar with a history of shotgun crimes. Concerns were also raised about another man who came looking for Guy at his home a few days before his death. So once the trial had been wrapped, a verdict was reached fairly shortly after deliberation started. It took the jury just 12 hours to find McDonald not guilty. After a short break, Justice Simon France remanded McDonald for sentencing on other charges. A year later, Guy's father, Brian, insisted that justice had prevailed. He said that he did not want the case to drag on for years without being solved and made a plea to his son's killer to give himself up. Naturally, Kylie, Scott Guy's wife, had a response to this whole thing. Not having faith in the police completely, Kylie Guy subsequently tried to track down her husband's killer and enlisted a private investigator, Mike Crawford, to conduct an investigation. After 18 months, the investigation was called off due to financial issues. Although it was called off, Crawford said Scott Guy received a number of phone calls the day before he died, and another on the day of his murder. However, there was no information about these calls, such as cell site data or subscriber details. Crawford thought these calls might have shed some light on whoever the killer actually might have been. We mentioned other suspects earlier, and there were a couple, but nothing really went anywhere, but let's look at them anyway. At the start of the investigation, police said that there were nearly 60 people they looked at as possible suspects. One of them was a man who committed an aggravated robbery 4 days before Scott was killed. He stole a carton of Winfield Gold cigarettes, and police found a cigarette of that brand on Scott's driveway near the murder site. Police stopped investigating him after his girlfriend, who was a meth addict, told police he came home maybe around 4 a.m., but admitted she was quote unquote, pretty wrecked on meth herself. A number of people told police this man, who has name suppression, was involved in the murder. But no, he wasn't good enough, apparently, because we can just take the eyewitness accounts of a methed up crackhead on her word. Another farm worker, Matthew Ireland, testified that he saw a car coming from the direction of Scott Guy's house as he arrived at the farm almost exactly at the time police believe Scott was murdered. Ireland also said that there was a second car coming from the same direction just after 5 a.m. as they rode towards the milking shed. The police never identified either of these cars. Peter Coles, one of McDonald's lawyers, said, quote, "The only way you'd be on that road is if you knew of its existence and had some reason to be there. It's not State Highway 1. The failure to find either of those cars, despite it being publicized through New Zealand, just defies belief unless that car is connected with the murder." Coles is convinced the police disregarded suspects who were more likely to have been involved than their client, McDonald. Another suspect was suggested by Dave Mary, who was the first to come across Guy's body. 2 weeks before Guy was shot, he recalled a, quote, "tall, unshaven man with dark hair, smelling of alcohol and cigarettes." The man banged on his door for Scott, but that was never investigated either. Another focus of inquiry was the assistant farm manager, Simon Asplin, who had a grudge against Scott since they were at school together. He subsequently disclosed that Scott pissed off a lot of people. When Mr. Guy returned to the farm in 2008, Asplin lost his favorite job, driving the tractors on the farm. At the trial, he acknowledged that he gained from Guy's death because he was, quote, "back on the tractor where he belonged." A case like this did indeed garner some public interest. It was classified as high profile and took the attention of the public for nearly 2 years. The trial lasted only 4 weeks and was scrutinized in detail by the media. During the trial, the public gallery was usually full up with up to 100 people, sometimes lined up outside hoping to get a glimpse of the proceedings. Law professor Chris Gallivan from Massey University said that the case interested the public because it involved beautiful, affluent white people from a small, conservative rural town and showed the rest of the country their family dynamics are as messed up as anyone else's. There were a number of outstanding charges as well. In June 2007, McDonald and Callum Bowe had killed 19 calves belonging to a farmer who had caught them poaching his deer. McDonald, who was convicted for burning down an old warehouse and emptying thousands of dollars worth of milk from a vat on another neighbor's farm. These acts were committed for quote-unquote retribution after McDonald and Bowe were informed of their trespassing and were made to apologize. Anna McDonald testified at the murder trial that her husband's relationship with Bowe was indeed immature and she was unaware of what they were doing on their regular quote-unquote night missions. When police found out about these missions, they visited Bowe, who by this time had moved to Queenstown. Bowe admitted his involvement and in the process provided police with an insight to McDonald's behavior. They arrested McDonald and charged him with murder soon afterwards. In September of 2012, McDonald was jailed for 5 years on lesser charges. He was eligible to attend his first parole meeting in December of 2012. In November of 2012, McDonald's well-known lawyer, Greg King, was found dead in Wellington. The finding of the coroner released in October 2013 was that the death had been suicide. In November of 2014, it was reported that McDonald had been denied parole for the third time and his term of imprisonment might run until completion of his sentence on April 6th, 2016. He was granted parole at his fourth appearance before a parole board on October 13th, 2015 and was free from prison on November 2nd, 2015. And he was subjected to very strict terms of parole. In the end, the killer of Scott Guy was never found. It's hard to believe that in this day and age, forensics just couldn't come up with a suspect and convict a killer. Was it McDonald? Well, we don't know for sure. He did seem the most likely suspect, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he was the culprit in the end. And what of this shotgun-wielding, cigarette-smoking criminal who aggressively breaks into businesses with a shotgun? We also can't really explain where the weapon of murder went. It obviously wasn't a double-barrel shotgun, since witnesses did indeed hear 3 shots go off. Now, it is possible they were mistaken, and it could have been a coincidence that maybe 2 shots went off and then a truck or a car or tractor backfired. It is farm country. It was around the time where people are starting their day. I don't know. That one's a little weird to me as well. It just doesn't seem like Ewan McDonald was indeed the killer. He was a piece of work who killed animals and sabotaged other farmers. But was he a murderer? I don't know. That is still the question. And given the length that this has been going on, I don't think we will ever find the culprit responsible for the death of Scott Guy. But that is all I have for you today. If you did like what you heard, please feel free to leave a 5-star rating on Spotify or Apple iTunes. Whichever you prefer. Honestly, it doesn't matter to me, or both if you want to get spicy with it. Anyway, until next time, my name is Casey. Have a good one.